There are many quotes from Troy Smith that you've indicated throughout your book, quotes that could be, as you said earlier, applied to most any business. One of them is, ownership could make a manager. If they own it, they will take care of it. And I like this one. I always told my managers they would be able to afford a big car, golf clubs, and vacations. I also told them that if they succeeded with Sonic, they couldn't afford to use them.
That's right. They would have no time to use any of that stuff.
They established a standard Sonic menu, didn't they, that everybody used, but I think each individual franchisee didn't have to follow it. They could add things to it, like one of them started a breakfast that was unique to Sonic.
Yeah. If there's one constant theme throughout this book, it's this balancing act between centralized control and individual control of a franchisee. And that balance would change. And typically, the trajectory was more responsibility coming to central operations. But at the time that Charlie Pappy died, yeah, they recommended certain things, but you had regional. So out in New Mexico, they could add a chili burger because they had, you know, the chilies from New Mexico. Or it might be in the South where they would have some kind of odd barbecue they could add. And so the menus were different, and they ordered materials or supplies locally. So if you had a franchise, because trucking was not efficient, it would not have been efficient to buy a bunch of hamburger patties in Oklahoma City and ship them out to Durant and then into Texas or up into Kansas as they were expanding. So they allowed people to buy their own stuff. So that was a difference in quality. So that was part of this diversified, decentralized business plan. And that was a problem because as America started traveling more by road, and they said, oh, there's a Sonic. Let me get that hamburger. I love that hamburger back in that last town, and it was different. So that hurt sales. And so people were becoming aware of this balancing act of the menus, but they tried to keep the menus as lean as possible, so you eliminated wastage. Troy learned back at the Cottage Cafe. He was putting money in the trash can at the end of the day if he hadn't sold what wouldn't keep overnight. He was learning how to use his materials more efficiently. So wherever they might, a good story here is on onion rings. Everyone who goes to Sonic, onion rings is one of their signature dishes. They've been there since the very beginning. Troy and Charlie had different views of how to do. They both agreed they would use their ice cream mix to dip the onions in it. And the onions, they found out, could be cut the night before. And you take a big onion, and you take the center part of the onion that's fairly uniform, and then those would be the rings that would go into tomorrow's onion rings, and put them in ice water. Ice water in the refrigerator. Because you want your onion rings to be real cold before they're coated, so when they're put in the hot grease, they hold on. And it shrinks. The water has an impact, and it keeps the ready. If you ever tried onion rings at home, you use warm onions, they're going to lose all the coating. So that was consistent. But Troy had worked in a bread company. And although Charlie used breadcrumbs on his onion rings at the time, Troy remembered the guy who sliced the bread at Martha Ann's in Shawnee, and he chewed tobacco. As the stack of breadcrumbs started growing after slicing all this bread all morning, Troy would witness, you know, that guy spitting the tobacco juice into it. So Troy says, I'm not going to use breadcrumbs. I'm going to use something else. So he had a different recipe for his onion rings. But eventually that would have been systematized so everyone would get the instructions how to do onions where you're taking advantage. And then the ends of the onions would be chopped up to go on your hamburger or hot dog or foot-long chili dog the next day. So there were efficiencies built into the system, and they would do training and all. But the menus did change, and really not until after Cliff Hudson came, and we'll get to that story here soon, did you start having centralized control of menus, of ordering supplies, centralized advertising. So in the days of the 60s and 70s during expansion, largely the local people did their own advertising. Typically that would be an ad in the yearbook or the student newspaper on campus. That would be an ad in the local newspaper. So when advertising was local, and there was a newspaper in every town, you and I remember that, it's so different today, but they would advertise locally. They'd have local promotions, you know, bring in your graduation top hat with a tassel on it and 10-cent discount on your next hamburger. And so that would be the way people would do it. But as advertising grew and television and radio became more important, and radio went from every locally owned station in every little town, you were part of that pioneering effort, as it gets consolidation, then one person can go to the network, get advertised on all these stations with a discount. Well, all that was changing during this time period, but there was much more local control in the 60s, and that would only change gradually. But Marvin Gyrus, as president of Sonic Supply, Sonic Inc., would do some advertising nationally. He sponsored things at air shows. He would sponsor some regional events, but it was still largely a Southern company, mainly in Oklahoma, some in Kansas, Arkansas, Texas, New Mexico, and then it was a gradually expanding by the time the Second Great Depression hits with the failure of the deep gas industry in the early 80s.
So let's remember, we started in 1958 talking about this. The magazine Inc., the magazine for growing companies, surveyed the top 100 fastest-growing companies in America and found that Sonic was number one over the five-year period from 1973 to 78. So that was just 11, 12, 13 years later they had received that kind of endorsement. Pretty amazing.